Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, August 16th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Some Zimbabweans attack Pastor Ivan Mawarire off hashtag this flag for leaving the country.
I think Ivan Mawarire was just an opportunist. He just used the masses to climb the ladder of success and to gain popularity, which he did. And I'm sure he got the visa that he always wanted.
And the family of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara says it will continue using his children in protest despite attacks by human rights defenders.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Pastor Ivan Mawarire of This Flag Movement is currently in the United States, where he is set to address a packed audience at the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. Back home, some Zimbabweans feel that he has not lived up to his slogan, Hatichacha, literally meaning "we are no longer afraid," which he used to organize public protests together with a Tajamuka Sesijikile campaign that shut down Zimbabwe last month. But others say Pastor Mawarire made the right decision in leaving the country as his life was in danger. Reporter Patricia Mudadigwa has more details from Harare.
Many have accredited Pastor Ivan Mawarire of This Generation Church for awakening a conscious citizen in a country where the ZANU-PF government allegedly uses fear, torture, and even enforced disappearances to any of its critics. However, some Zimbabweans feel betrayed by the failure by Pastor Mawarire to return to Zimbabwe to fight with other pro-democracy activists for the rights of Zimbabweans and to continue demanding for good governance. One such supporter is Celine Eunice Nyakutsika, who now believes that hashtag this flag campaign started by Pastor Mawarire was just a conduit for him to get accepted in foreign lands.
I think Ivan Mawarire was just an opportunist. He just used the masses to climb the ladder of success and to gain popularity, which he did. And I'm sure he got the visa that he always wanted, and he's happy now where he is. We saw him crying buckets on TV the other day, the World TV, and I think he was trying to attract the investors out there, and he did. I think now he's getting all the money that he has always wanted.
Worship Dumba, a political activist, concurs with Nyakutsika. He told Studio 7 that he was no longer sure whether Pastor Ivan Mawarire is a true pro-democracy activist. For Dumba, a fighter should always be with the people and should never leave the battlefields despite threats to his or her life.
What bothers most people is why he has decided to leave the country. Because a true fighter will always fight with the people. That's why we can see people like Robert Mugabe spend some years, 10 or so years in jail, because he was with the people then. But now him just saying a thing, and then after going to court where he was actually even acquitted, he decides to leave the country. Then now that actually bothers many people.
So fierce has been the debate over Pastor Ivan Mawarire's departure on social media to such an extent that so many theories have been concocted about him. Some allege he's a ZANU-PF activist, but there are some who believe that Pastor Mawarire has played his part and every Zimbabwean should fight for democracy and development. With enforced disappearance of Itai Dzamara, who has been missing for the past 17 months, Tsikamai Bere, a human rights activist, believes Pastor Mawarire had an obligation to keep himself and his family safe.
This is a struggle for everyone. As a human rights defender, I think Pastor Ivan Mawarire has got an obligation to defend himself and his family. If there are credible threats against his life, as a human rights defender, I do feel he has an obligation to keep himself safe for the sake of his family, for the sake of his wife, for the sake of his children.
Studio 7 also spoke to Wisdom Mugagari, who urged Pastor Mawarire to return home, even in the face of adversity, to continue the fight against the alleged mismanagement of the economy by the ZANU-PF government.
Unfortunately, he has decided to go outside the country to relocate for his safety. And it posed a lot of questions from a number of people that why is he out, yet he started a very good campaign. If he's genuine and real, let him come back home. We start again. We work together with any other pro-activists who believe in democracy, who believe in good governance, who believe in human rights. So if Mr. Mawarire is genuine, come back home, brother.
Pastor Mawarire started his movement by posting a video online a few days after Zimbabwe celebrated independence. Mawarire said the failure to source school fees for his children forced him to record himself draped in the Zimbabwean flag, questioning the governance of the country. The 39-year-old was arrested by the Zimbabwean police after the July 6 complete shutdown, but the charges were later dropped after Zimbabweans protested at the courts. Mawarire left the country for South Africa, reporting for Studio 7 from Harare. This is Patricia Mudadigwa.
The family of missing Africa Unity Square activist Itai Dzamara has hit back, calling a statement released by UNICEF Zimbabwe on the involvement of Itai's children and other kids last week as deplorable and pathetic, and pushing a ZANU-PF agenda. Itai's brother, Dr. Patson Dzamara, says it's unclear why the chief of communications for UNICEF Zimbabwe released a statement condemning the use of the children during a commemoration last Wednesday. Studio 7 reached out to Chief of Communications for UNICEF Zimbabwe, Victor Chinyama, who said he wanted to respond in writing and emailed an official statement saying, quote, "Zimbabwe and international laws establish clear respect for children's rights and the protection of children from violence. Children should be kept out of all political movements and actions that put them at risk," end quote. Chinyama failed to respond to most questions from Studio 7, but responded to growing allegations that UNICEF communications specialist Elizabeth Bessie Mufumira, daughter of ZANU-PF Minister Prisca Mufumira, was behind the statement, saying Mufumira has been on leave since and had no input in the statement. Dzamara tells Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo that the Dzamara family and others will continue to involve their children at all commemorations for Itai Dzamara. However, we will be able to play you this story a little bit later as we have to attend to some technical hicks. I would like to apologize for that hitch. And right now we give you the story of the Dzamara family and their children.
And so communities and the reputation they do have in our eyes to then partake or participate in that, it actually leaves us in a very curious position, and it actually leaves them in a compromised position. We did not see any reason whatsoever why they had to pick the issue of this dancer, and yet for the past 17 months, whenever as a family we commemorate Itai Dzamara's disappearance, we go with three children. I do not know what was novel about this particular commemoration that they had to come out guns blazing on us and attacking my person in particular that I am using or abusing his children. Abusing in what sense?
Dr. Dzamara, will you be bringing the children along in your continuous commemorations, if need be, even after this backlash from UNICEF?
Definitely. Why not? There's nothing legal about that fact. Like I said, we are black children, and so there's every reason to partake and to participate in anything that has got to do with their father. And like I said, the bottom line is that this is also one of the ways we're actually using to clear up for us, not just the children, but to everyone who is concerned to gain some sort of closure regarding the eyes disappearing.
That was Dr. Patson Dzamara, brother of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara, speaking there with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo. And sorry again, listeners, we have to apologize because of technical reasons. We will be playing you some music.
The Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe executive member who started a 10-day, 200-kilometer march yesterday from Mutawatawa in Marambafungwe, Mashonaland East Province, to Harare has already covered 20 kilometers. They are demanding an upward review of their salaries and raw allowances, full maternity leave for teachers, and an end to all forms of violence against rural teachers. They are also demanding that the government should tackle the current cash crisis gripping Zimbabwe, among many other issues. The teachers are expected to hand over petitions to district education offices at Murewa, Goromonzi, and the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education and the Public Service Commission offices in Harare. Spokesman of the organization, Robson Ruhanya, says they encountered threats from suspected ZANU-PF youths at Nyagande Primary School where they spent last night. Ruhanya tells Studio 7's Jongaka and Demiri that the youth confiscated their food and threatened villagers who sympathized with them.
Soon after handing a petition to the Minister of Education, the district offices in Maramba, we proceeded with our march yesterday, where we traveled for 15 kilometers to our resting place yesterday, that is Nyagande Primary School. We encountered a problem at Nyagande Primary School where we trapped yesterday. It happened during 12 a.m. when we tried to accommodate ourselves somewhere in the school. Some youth approached us and they took our food and water. Those are the problems that we encountered during the night after the threats from the district office in UMP.
Yesterday, you were joined by some villagers and school children. Did any join you today?
It's like today we faced a lot of problems in terms of convincing the villagers, because starting from yesterday, villagers and these children were under threat by ZANU-PF agents who were threatening to take away their lives if they pledged to join the march promoted by the Rural Teachers Union in Zimbabwe.
That was Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe spokesperson Robson Ruhanya on the phone from Uzumba Marambe Pfungwe with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Child rights organization Shamarie Mwanasikana today launched a program targeting boys and men.
Sorry about that. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. And now we look at regional and international news. Zambia's incumbent president may have narrowly won re-election, but the opposition says the vote was rigged. Violence already marred the run-up to the poll, and now observers are urging the government to maintain calm and resolve any disputes through the law. In many ways, this is a repeat of the nation's last election. What does this contentious political history mean for landlocked Zambia? VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Zambia is proud of its peaceful history. Since it became a multi-party democracy in 1991, it has seen a series of peaceful polls and transitions of power. Now that proud history is being tested. As the nation's opposition alleges, last week's poll was rigged, and police say they have arrested more than 150 rowdy opposition supporters who ran amok and vandalized property belonging to ruling party supporters. The opposition plans to challenge the count that gave President Edgar Lungu a narrow margin of victory. Analyst Mpomo Tsamai of the Pretoria-based Institute of Security Studies says onlookers should be more concerned about what happens next than what is happening now.
We should be worried about how the electoral petitions are going to be handled. Look, I think people are being worried about the violence that is taking place right now in the protests. You know, it's warranted worry, but the so-called instability in Zambia that is taking place is localized. It is not nationwide. So I don't see any potential regional spillovers.
She urged leaders to respect the legal processes that allow the results to be challenged in court. The opposition alleges the poll was rigged and the Electoral Commission colluded with the ruling Patriotic Front to give Lungu the win over challenger Hakainde Hichilema. The commission announced Monday that Lungu had won a margin of just 13,000 votes over the number he needed to avoid a runoff. Neither man's spokesman answered repeated calls seeking comment Tuesday. Vocal opposition supporter, former acting president Guy Scott, told VOA this is a key moment for Zambia. Scott is Lungu's predecessor, taking the helm shortly after the sudden death of President Michael Sata in 2014. Scott urged the international community to watch Zambia closely.
I would plead with the world to be a little bit patient, but also not that excited. I mean, trouble is news. If you saw the capital in Zambia, even if you give us 2 weeks, and we sort it out in 2 weeks, it's usually forgotten and gone on to some other African country that's having problems with its elections. And I would appeal to people to try and keep it in their memory that this is an issue and we want to see the system work.
The European Union observer mission pronounced the August 11 poll as being largely peaceful and well-administered. The nonpartisan Christian Church's monitoring group says the results were credible and in line with its pre-vote estimates. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And it is nearly 3 months before the U.S. presidential election, but numerous analysts are now saying there is more than an 80% likelihood that Democrat Hillary Clinton, a former U.S. Secretary of State, will defeat Republican Donald Trump, the brash real estate tycoon running for his first elected office. Child rights organization Shamaria Mwanaskana today launched a program targeting boys and men in the fight for the rights of young girls. Director Ekenia Chifamba tells Studio 7 her organization has decided to target these two groups in its campaign so that they can be part of the solution as incidents of girl child abuse go up in Zimbabwe.
We launched a men as role model platform. The platform is meant to have men and boys on board, looking at the issues that our girls are facing on a daily basis, how our girls' rights are being violated from all corners. So we launched this platform in partnership with Higher Life Foundation so as to ensure that we have men who become protectors and not perpetrators. We have men who value the rights of the girl child, ensuring that these girls are allowed to be girls so that we all do better, guarding them against all forms of abuse, be it sexual, the issues of child marriages, the issues of girls' rights being violated, especially the right to education. So it was a platform launched to have men from all corners, from all walks of life, coming together to support the empowerment and emancipation of the girl child.
What's the importance of involving men and boys in this campaign?
We have seen that men are the perpetrators. Men are the ones. It's either men are part of the problem or men are part of the solution. We have seen an increase in the statistics of girls who are victims of child marriages, the statistics of girls who are victims of sexual abuse, because we are seeing that, you know, from the recent statistics that we have, at least 11 girls are raped on a daily basis, girls who are between the ages of 11 to 15. So we decided to have men on board so that at the end of the day, we have them changing their attitude, changing their behavior. That's why we decided to have men and boys on board.
Who was your guest of honor and what did they have to say about your event?
The guest of honor for our event was the ambassador for Canada, Mr. Kumar Gupta. Mr. Kumar Gupta emphasized the need all the men in Zimbabwe, regardless of our differences, our social standing, our political affiliations, to come together and protect the girl child.
That was Ekenia Chifamba, director of Shamarie Mwanasikana in Harare.
News we have just received is that the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, we told you about earlier on, who are on a protest march of about 200 kilometers, say they have been surrounded at a shopping center and they have been forced to move to Nakiwa shopping center. And we will let you know more about the developments. Meanwhile, some economists are doubting the $57 million that the government says it has collected from toll gates since they were set up in 2013. Intertoll Chief Bridget Ledwaba revealed the figures on Monday when she appeared before a parliamentary portfolio committee on transport, saying revenue collection from the toll gates had improved this year after the computerization of the system. According to media reports, Zimbabwe National Revenue Authority Acting Chief Executive Officer Moses Juma admitted that millions of dollars were lost before toll gate collection was computerized. Economist Masimba Kuchera said there could be loopholes in the system, adding that the money raised does not measure up with the construction and maintenance of roads. Another economist, Prosper Chitambara told Studio 7 that the revenue collected from toll gates is insignificant.
It also needs to be looked at in the context of dwindling economic growth in the country. Obviously, that has also a bearing on the toll fees that governments are able to raise. So the figure itself is very, very low, obviously. When you look at the time period over which this money is necessarily been collected. But as I said, we need to look at it from that perspective of a declining economic growth in the country.
How significant is the money collected from these toll gates to the economy?
Very, very insignificant, especially when you consider what needs to be done in terms of rehabilitation, even construction of new roads within the country. I think how much the country needs to rehabilitate its road network, I think it's far much, much, much bigger than what we are actually raising through this toll fee.
From your own assessment, do you think that there is enough safeguards that making sure that the money is used appropriately and is accounted for?
I think that has been the problem, really. But there's been a general decay in terms of the institutional fabric in the country, especially with respect to how our parastatals and state-owned enterprises are actually managed. I think many people have seen these as probably vehicles for the extraction of rents by political elites. So there's been a lot of political interferences, and I think that has also affected a good corporate governance within some of these institutions. So I think there's been obviously a lot of political interferences in the way parastatals are managed. And I think these are the challenges that probably we need to deal with. How do we strengthen these institutions in order to improve corporate governance, in order to improve transparency, in order to improve accountability, and also obviously in order to improve service delivery? So I don't think there have been those kind of institutional safeguards to ensure that every cent collected goes where it's supposed to go.
But then if the revenue from toll gates is that insignificant, and also looking at other sectors of the economy which are not performing well, where then is the government getting its revenue from?
Well, the government, I think the only major source, I would say almost 100% of the revenues are coming from the taxes. There hasn't been FDI is actually declined between 2014 and 2015. Even those internal revenues, they're also declining. When you look at the Zimra report for quarter two and quarter one, they actually show a declining trend in terms of domestic revenue.
That was economic commentator Prosper Chitambara. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. And remember, on Live Talk, we'll be talking about the use of children in public protests. This is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing a pleasant evening and a very good night.